It's religion today, it's ideology today, and our secularist friends also have a faith.
Some kind of Disneyland fantasy.
I know how this is going to get heard in the secular world.
Where the pseudo-Christian masks are off.
That's nonsense, ladies and gentlemen.
Apologetics isn't just about giving answers to other people's questions. It's also about learning to question other people's answers or even question the question itself.
In a Christian worldview.
Welcome to Quantum number 16. Please do forgive my voice. I've been speaking a lot. I've been away at the FIEC conference down in Torquay, the Riviera of England. Well, where can we begin? And I guess, given at the time of recording what's just happened, the Brexit deal, inverted commas deal, there are a few things that we really do need to say about it. Now, it'll be no surprise to regular listeners of this podcast or of the blog that I'm not the biggest fan of the EU for many, many reasons. There are Christians who think differently, and I don't think the Bible tells us whether we should be in the EU or out of it. However, let me offer the following observations as to why this deal won't work and why it's ultimately quite disastrous. I think I'll begin first of all by simply saying this, that I remember going round a council house estate once and a man saying to me, I was campaigning for a political group, and he said, listen son, don't encourage them, don't vote, it only encourages them. He says, nothing ever changes, they're not going to do anything for us. I thought it was a deeply cynical and flawed viewpoint. I now think he was wise, I think it was the reality. It doesn't matter what the people vote. And those people who are demanding, inverted commas, a people's vote, no they're not. They're doing what the EU always does, saying, go back until you give us the right result. Leave us to govern the country, you dumb plebs haven't a clue what you're voting for. You're either a bunch of ignorant racists or you don't know what's best for you. Leave it up to us. The us being those who benefit most, the us being, of course, those who get the subsidies, the us being those who have the power, and they want to retain it. And that's what so much of this is all about.
So we have ended up in a situation where 17.4 million people voted to leave the European Union. We're actually going to be stuck in European Union institutions without the power to leave them. That is what it looks like. That is.
And so, as Brendan O'Neill points out, this is a denial of democracy. And as Rod Liddell points out in an article that I've linked to from The Spectator, this is the establishment winning. The establishment always wins.
Mr. Speaker, yesterday we agreed the provisional terms of our exit from the European Union, set out in the draft withdrawal agreement. We also agreed the broad terms of our future relationship in an outline political declaration. President Juncker has now written to the President of the European Council to recommend that decisive progress has been made in the negotiations, and a special European Council will be called for Sunday, the 25th of November. This puts us close to a Brexit deal. Mr. Speaker, what we agreed yesterday was not the final deal. It is a draft treaty. It is a draft treaty that means that we will leave the EU in a smooth and orderly way on the 29th of March 2019.
What Theresa May has done, it's not her deal, by the way. She says it's my deal or no deal. It's not her deal. It's a deal that was written by the EU Commission. The EU Commission, which doesn't have to get elected, so it can continually say no. We can say no, but they just wear us out. So I think that the EU is like Hotel California. You can check out any time you want, but you can never leave.
She said, we are all just prisoners here of our own device. And in the master's chambers, they're gathered for the feast. They stab it with their stealing eyes, but they just can't kill the beast. Last thing I remember.
With May's deal, what it means is that the EU has no need to negotiate anything, because there's always the backstop, which keeps us aligned to all their rules, which keeps us involved but not deciding with all the laws that they make. So it's a desperately sad day in so many ways. What's going to happen? It's possible she may get it through and we'll be tied in. And to be honest, right now, that's probably the best option. But it's an awful option, and she has betrayed, and our politicians, our political class, have betrayed the electorate. They shouldn't have had a referendum. They never intended to let us have our say if we disagree with them. I think many of our politicians, not just May, but the SNP, the Liberals, most of the Labour ones, many of the Conservatives, they should be thoroughly ashamed of their contempt for the people. Well, I thank the Lord that my faith is not in politicians, because if it was, my faith would be, I'd be beyond being a doubter, I'd be a complete apostate by now. Let's move on to something else. And that something actually makes me even sadder than the mess, in Scots, we speak of this phrase, the burach that our politicians have made of Brexit. And that is Asia Bibi. I'm utterly and thoroughly ashamed of the United Kingdom government and of the Australian government, who have just gone along this route as well. Our good friend Mark Powell, Presbyterian minister in Sydney, has written an excellent article for the Australian Spectator, pointing out the cowardice of the Australian government and de facto the UK government in refusing to offer Asia Bibi asylum. Why? Because they're scared of community upset that it will cause. In other words, amongst the Islamic community. In other words, they are absolutely kowtowing to Islamic extremism. What an embarrassment that we live in a country where our politicians cannot deliver on their promises, and where they cannot even offer asylum to a working-class, agricultural, labourer, Christian woman who is in danger, is in absolute danger of being killed in her own country. And we can't offer her asylum because we're scared it might upset people in ours. God have mercy on us. Speaking of persecution, the government are actually doing one really good thing, and that is putting £12 million, not a massive amount of money, into seeking to combat religious persecution throughout the world, and the vast majority of which is done against Christians. There was quite a remarkable piece by on BBC Radio 4's Today programme last Friday with their wonderful religious correspondent Martin Bashir explaining why this was necessary.
Martin Bashir, first, our religion editor. Martin, seems quite a lot of money. Is there much persecution?
Well, let me go through a couple of places for you. Pakistan, Easter Sunday 2016, a suicide bomber detonates explosives as Christian families are enjoying a relaxing time in a public park, having celebrated the resurrection. 26 children were among a total of 70 brutally murdered. Or how about St. Matthew's Church in Alexandria, Egypt, Palm Sunday last year, the second of two bomb attacks, kills 45 Christians, wounds more than 100. Or Plateau State in Nigeria, where over the course of a weekend in June this year, 238 Christians were killed in a number of attacks by militia.
But the thought, even hearing all that, it still makes me ask, we're giving £12 million to help combat religious persecution and intolerance throughout the world. We can't even take one woman whose life has been threatened by that intolerance into our own country. Meanwhile, the revolution continues to eat itself. Jenny Murray, the well-known BBC presenter of Women's Hour, not a programme I listen to a lot, but my good lady loves it. She has, in effect, been banned from speaking at the University of Oxford because of her transphobic views, because she believes that simply to have an operation or to make her declaration does not make you a woman. It's fairly obvious, it's fairly rational, it's fairly right, but Oxford University Students' Union think this is transphobic and it hurts and harms vulnerable members of our community.
BBC Radio Scotland on a Friday morning with Stephen Jardine. Thank you for your company today. Coming up in the final hour of the programme.
Speaking of intolerance and transphobia and all the other things that go on, we want to play you the interview that I did last Friday. I was phoned and asked would I be willing to go on the Stephen Jardine show on BBC Radio Scotland to talk about the Scottish Government's proposal for time for inclusive education, which, as we know, is actually time for exclusive education, teaching only queer theory and the LGBT agenda in every single one of our schools, not just in every single one of our schools, but in every single subject, which is just so profoundly depressing.
From the Time for Inclusive Education campaign in just a moment, and what this will actually mean in the classroom as well. But before that, could it undermine some people's beliefs? Let's talk about this with David Robertson, Minister of St Peter's in Dundee and Director of the SOLAS Centre for Public Christianity. David, thank you for your time this morning.
No, thank you. Nice to be with you.
What's your reaction to this announcement that Scotland will become the first country in the world to enshrine LGBTI teaching and advice in the education system?
I think it's a profoundly depressing day, for Scotland and for our education system, which at one time was the best in the world and at the moment is in severe decline. And at best, this is, I think, virtue signalling. But in reality, I think it's discriminatory and I think it's indoctrination. And I think it's unnecessary expense when the money could be used for much better things.
Why? Isn't this about equality?
No. In fact, it's the very opposite of equality. It's about teaching only one particular philosophy and one particular view and excluding everyone else. I mean, they're very good with words. It's very Orwellian. They talk about time for inclusive education, but it's actually not. It's time for exclusive education. People who hold my point of view, for example, I mean, I think it's against human rights as well. Article 26.3 of the United Nations Convention of Human Rights says parents have a prior right to choose the kind of education that should be given to their children, and to do so in accordance with their philosophy or religion. And what's happening here is all of our children are going to be indoctrinated into one particular philosophy. Now, please don't get me wrong. I think that the aspect of bullying should be dealt with, and should be dealt with anything, but not just LGBTI bullying, but, say, for example, bullying for religious grounds of Muslims or Jews or Christians, bullying for different hair colours or for body size or whatever. So all bullying should be dealt with. But the reality is that the bullying thing is being used as an excuse to impose a doctrine and a philosophy upon all our children. And I strongly object to that.
The Bible teaches us tolerance. As a minister, how does that sit with what you've just told me?
Well, what have I just said that's not about being tolerant? I'm asking for tolerance. I'm asking for tolerance of different viewpoints. I'm asking that we don't have state-imposed doctrine upon all our children. So I'm totally for tolerance. That's not the issue. This is not about being anti-LGBT. It's about the philosophy that's taught. Let me give you one example. In the government working group that was set up, which, by the way, included LGBT Youth Scotland, the Scottish Trans Alliance, Stonewall Scotland, and the Thai campaign or whatever, it was incredibly one-sided. And it's going to be very, very hard for anyone to question it. But in that, it says, talking about transgender, about the sex assigned at birth. Now, I'm sorry, that is a philosophical statement that is absolute nonsense. We do not have our sex assigned at birth. Nobody, no midwife goes, oh, I think we'll call this one a boy or we'll call this one a girl. We are born. I mean, there's a biological reality. Now, all of this comes from queer theory. It's a particular philosophy which is now going to be imposed upon all Scotland's children. And I've seen the result of that already, and I think it will cause incredible harm. So,
what do you mean when you say you've seen the result of it? What do you mean?
I mean, a 7-year-old girl coming home from school, bursting into tears, and saying to her mum and dad, "Am I a boy or a girl?" Because teacher says I can choose. I mean, a class of 8- and 9-year-olds having to look at a poster and being told respect people's pronouns. I mean, a 14-year-old who's struggling with depression is told by a guidance teacher who's been on a Stonewall course, maybe it's because you're in the wrong body, and the harm that that does. You know, this is the kind of thing we're dealing with all the time. I mean, those who go through the whole transgender thing, including surgery, and end up with an 80% negative outcome. But above all, I mean, the harm that gets caused by deconstructing humanity, instead of teaching that human beings are male and female, saying there's 99 genders or whatever, you can choose whatever gender you want, you can be whatever you want. I think it will destroy women's sports. I think it destroys feminism. I think it makes a nonsense of so many things, which is why in the Scottish Government's Gender Recognition Act, it's why the strongest opposition is coming from feminist groups.
Okay. Thanks for your time this morning, David. Appreciate it. We'll hear the other side of this argument in just a second, but right now...
And then, after the interview, after all that happened, I was genuinely surprised to see that it was a bit of a setup, because they had two people afterwards who were going to speak about Tai, and obviously before it, and I would not be allowed to respond. And as a result, they trashed me. One, Liam, said that I was on my own, or maybe just a handful of people, and we're from another century. Both of them did not really engage with the arguments, and both of them talked down and patronized. And it really was actually quite awful. And to be fair to Stephen Jardine and also to the BBC, when I wrote them and said, you know, this was out of line, they did agree, and I got a kind of half-hearted apology. But this is what we're up against. It's people who, they feel perfectly fine to express opinions about Christianity, or about people like me who would hold to a Christian biblical worldview, demean, attack, diminish. They don't engage with our arguments. They treat us as though we are from another century. In fact, we shouldn't really be around and be alive. People like us need to be removed from polite society. But we're winning the argument. Because let me tell you something. After that interview, I met with somebody who'd identified as trans, and who agreed entirely with what I'd been saying. In fact, so much so that she has begun an anonymous series on my blog explaining what happened to her. Now, here's the really sad thing. You know, our time for inclusive education, they're going on about how we want people to feel included. Now, listen to this. This is a young lady in the United Kingdom today who had to change her name, who's had death threats and rape threats, all because she said she no longer wanted to be trans. Now, where are the BBC covering stories like this? Where are our politicians talking about this? And where's the inclusive education in that? Why don't we have someone like this young lady going into schools and telling teenage girls, listen, you're going to go through this, it's going to be really horrible, do not medically transition. See, our government... Again, it's back like the Brexit thing. It's full of kind of intellectual vacuousness and also utter cowardice. Just virtue signaling and just going along. Where are the people who are actually going to speak up for people who are actually suffering? See, I'm going to speak out against bullying of any kind. But I think that what's going on in our culture is that certain groups are being privileged and other groups are being condemned. But sometimes it looks as though, it feels as though we certainly are winning the argument. So Jordan Peterson appeared on BBC Question Time, and it was good to see him referring to the campaign that we've had about the police hate posters.
Oh, I know in Scotland the police had put up advertisements in the Tube encouraging people to turn people in for offensive behaviour online. It seems to me, for example, if you're concerned about knife crime, and maybe one of the things you don't want to do is have your police investigating offensive speech. And one of the things I do see happening in the UK as an outsider that's really quite terrifying to me is that there are increasing restrictions put on people's ability to speak forthrightly, and that the consequence of that restriction and the criminalization of what hypothetically constitutes offensive speech is going to be a cure that's so much more worse than the disease that we can hardly imagine it. It's a dreadful thing to see that. Who's going to regulate it? Who's going to define hate? That's the real issue. It's not that there's not hate. There's plenty of it. The question is, who defines hate and how is it prosecuted?
I'm not...
But what amused me about the Question Time appearance was when I went to look at it on the BBC iPlayer, there was actually a warning. Language may offend. Was there swearing? Was there sexual language? No. What were they talking about? Was it Jordan Peterson? It's just incredible how quickly people take offence. So there's a remarkable story about Instagram, that Instagram banned a post because it argued for male leadership in the church. So, you know, what the Catholic Church does, only priests are male. What many Protestant churches do in terms of elders and pastors. Many don't, but many do. Whether you agree with it or not, it doesn't matter. But someone had posted, Founders Ministries, I think they're called, which is a conservative Baptist organization, had posted a theological article entitled Only Men May Be Pastors. And it was an article written by Pastor Tom Hicks, which set out the biblical qualifications for being a pastor. Now, whatever you think about this, should people be banned for saying that? So, I personally agree with it, but if somebody posted an article saying, well, I think women should be pastors, do I think they should be banned? No. Oh, well, not Instagram. Your post has been deleted. We removed your post because it doesn't follow our community guidelines on hate speech or symbols. If you violate our guidelines again, your account may be restricted or disabled. So the traditional Christian position, which you may not like and you may not agree with, but that, hey, we're meant to live in a free society, is now considered to be hate speech. So the Catholic Church should be banned because it's promoting hate speech. Many Protestant churches should be banned because they promote hate speech. My church, we shouldn't be allowed on Twitter because we only have male elders. Now, I said, I keep repeating it, it doesn't matter whether you think that's right or that's wrong, but do we have the right to even say it? Apparently, in this brave new world, no. Just listen to a little bit of this. It's a baby. If you go to the video, it's a really cute baby. Smiling, laughing. It's a baby in an advert for pro-abortion. Where they say, doesn't she deserve to be a choice? Stand with Planned Parenthood. Some people have described the video as creepy. I describe it as evil. Demonically evil. Because you're showing a picture of a cute baby and you're saying, do you know this? If this baby was not chosen, was not deliberately wanted, kill her. Kill her. Get rid of her. Because it's better to be a choice than to be alive. Or rather, let me rephrase that. It's better to be dead than to be alive and not have been wanted or a deliberate choice. Just pause for a minute and think the depths of depravity that we have gone to when a major government-funded organization like Planned Parenthood can put that out and think that somehow it's acceptable. Well, let me just finish off with just a wee comment on where I've been for the past 2 or 3 days, and that is simply I have been down in Torquay. And as I said, I was at the Fellowship of Independent Evangelical Churches. So much to encourage. I've written a wee piece about it. But the fact that 10 years ago there were maybe 50 church leaders meeting for their leaders' conference, now there were 900. Wonderful to hear Don Carson preaching God's word. Wonderful to be sharing with the men and women there. Wonderful to see them appointing a full-time women's director. Wonderful in so many ways. I was so encouraged by so much of it. Of course there are problems, of course there are difficulties, but I think that these 900 church leaders meeting in Torquay is of far more significance to the nation than the 30 cabinet ministers arguing about a Brexit that almost certainly is not going to happen. I think it's far more important that we have biblical churches in every one of our communities than that we have the UK either in or out of the EU. And whilst we still have the freedom, whilst we're not accused of being purveyors of hate speech and banned, we need to get on and do that as much as possible. So I'm going to leave you there. I'm going to leave you with a quote actually from Martin Luther, something really for us to think about. I am afraid that the schools will prove the very gates of hell unless they diligently labour in explaining the Holy Scriptures and engraving them in the heart of the youth. We need to get back to that. We need to get back to Knox's maxim that where you have a church, there you have a school. We need to teach our children the Scriptures and engrave them in the hearts of our youths. If you want to help us do that, then you can support this podcast as well, and you can go to patron.podbean.com/theweefly, and you could help by donating there on a monthly basis, even a small amount. If you're from the United Kingdom, don't worry about the fact that it's in dollars. It does get translated. It's quite technologically efficient. But it would be really, really grateful. I'd love to continue this podcast. And even though at times you just think, oh, Lord, help us. In fact, that's what we are saying. Lord, help us. And it was really good at the FIEC conference to meet so many of you who listen to this podcast and who are encouraged by it. God bless you, and God bless this nation, and God bless his work throughout the world, as we know he will do. See you next week. We were rescued from the world. He left us here to be his servants. We don't need more superstars. We need more gospel-centered churches. Working is the body to bring the gospel to the nations. Even when we face rejection, Jesus is our validation. And we will be vindicated. Yeah, we know his path is narrow. To follow him requires more than bumper stickers and apparel. They will know us by our love, not by our celebrities. So we pray for those who persecute us and show love to our enemies. Ah. We're in this world, not of it. Gotta be scared and run from it. We shine light in the darkness. That's